Welcome to the Financial Analyst Journal Author Interview Series. I'm Abby Farson Pratt, Assistant Editor at CFA Institute, and we're here today with Rodney Sullivan, CFA, to discuss his recent FHA article, The Limits to Arbitrage and the Low Volatility Anomaly, published in the January-February 2014 issue. Rodney, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
In this interview series, as you know, we invite our authors to discuss their articles with us. So let's get started. First, Rodney, what was the practical issue or issues that motivated your research?
Well, the things that motivated us, first of all, were the findings by practitioners that date back to Fisher Black and some others some 40 years ago, where they found that low-risk stocks perform as well, if not better, than high-risk stocks. So as we all know, this finding flies in the face of CAPM and portfolio theory, whereby CAPM and the security market line suggest to us that there should be a positive risk-return relationship between stocks and their risk. So in other words, low-risk stocks should have an expected return that's lower than stocks that have a high risk. And of course, what these researchers have found, starting with Fisher Black and even into most recent studies in recent years, find that the so-called SML, security market line, is in fact too flat versus portfolio theory. And so what's happened with all of this research is that practitioners have sought in recent years to take advantage of this so-called low-risk anomaly. And the flows, the asset flows into these so-called low-risk strategies have been very strong in recent years. In fact, as recent as 2008, there was as little as, say, $5 billion in these low-risk strategies. And more recently, at the end of 2013, this $5 billion in assets under management has grown to over $60 billion in assets under management in accordance with these low-vol strategies. So given the combination of these anomalous findings by researchers and the rapid growth in AUM, it occurred to us that these two issues beg for a deeper understanding of the so-called low-risk anomaly and the extent to which investors can, in reality and in practice, take advantage of these low-risk return of the relationship between risk and returns.
Great. So can you tell us some more about how you approach this issue?
Well, we sought, as I mentioned, we sought to understand whether the alpha associated with the so-called low-vol effect can be effectively captured over time, or whether there were some limits to the investor's ability to arbitrage the so-called low-risk anomaly. And so we tackled this objective by examining the role that portfolio rebalancing and portfolio transactions costs play in investors effectively capturing the profitability from these strategies. And what we did in particular was we created so-called quintile sorts of risk portfolios. And so what that means is we calculated the risk of portfolios, risk meaning the idiosyncratic volatility and the beta of these of the stocks. And we grouped these stocks into risk quintiles, starting with low-risk stocks in the first quintile all the way up to the high-risk stocks in the fifth or highest quintile. And then we explored the returns associated with these quintiles. And more specifically, we created what the research calls long-short zero-cost portfolios. And what that means is we created a portfolio that was long the lowest risk quintile and short the highest risk quintile. And we explored the returns associated with that so-called long-short portfolio over time.
How do your findings or results influence practice?
Well, what we found was that a couple of things that I think are very interesting. We first found that capturing the profitability of this so-called low-risk phenomenon requires frequent rebalancing. And in fact, we found that in order for the long-short portfolio to have meaningful alpha over time, portfolios would have to be rebalanced at least monthly. So that was the first finding. And then we began the process of factoring in transactions cost. And what we found was that the low volatility effect, while it doesn't disappear, it does decline markedly when factoring in transactions cost. So, for example, when we form a portfolio that excludes penny stocks or those stocks under $5, The alpha associated with the low volatility effect declines quite markedly by about 50% or so. Similarly, when we formed equal-weighted portfolios as opposed to dollar-weighted portfolios, the alpha declines quite a bit as well. And then lastly, what we did was we formed portfolios with direct proxies of transactions, costs, and liquidity. So for example, we used a measure called daily trade volume, which is commonly used in the literature to measure the liquidity of stocks. And what we did was we, again, grouped stocks not only in accordance with their volatility or their risk, but we also grouped stocks in accordance with their daily trade volume. And then we explored the findings around what happened to the low vol effect and the alpha of the low vol effect as it relates to stocks with low liquidity versus high liquidity, as measured by daily trade volume, for instance, and a few others. And what we found was consistent across all of our different proxies of transactions, costs, and liquidity, in that stocks with high levels of liquidity and thus low transactions cost, the alpha was much less prevalent versus stocks with low liquidity and low transactions cost. So in other words, transactions costs matter and limits to arbitrage matter quite a bit in our findings.
Great, thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Well, some key takeaways from all of this research as it relates to practice. I mean, after all, we undertook this research and we were motivated by the practice and applicability of the low volatility findings as it relates to practice. And so what we found was that, first of all, the low volatility anomaly does exist. In fact, our research does confirm the existence of the so-called low volatility anomaly. So first of all, we're not contesting those results. What we do find, though, as I mentioned, is that the efficacy of exploiting this well-known effect is, in fact, a bit more limited than widely believed. And we think that this is very important and will inform, hopefully, better ways to construct portfolios in the future that can, in fact, take advantage of this low volatility anomaly, but in a more informed way or informed fashion. So let me just give an example. One quick and easy thing to do would be for investors to, looking back to how we form portfolios along the five quintiles, low risk up to highest risk, one thing that investors could do is simply toss aside those stocks comprising the highest risk and form portfolios that comprise portfolios of the lower risk quintiles. And so we think that's one simple but yet effective and important way of perhaps taking advantage of this anomaly. In fact, what we found when looking at these quintiles returns is that the performance of the highest risk quintile was actually the most anomalous in the sense that it underperformed dramatically all the other quintiles. So it wasn't so much that the low risk quintile dramatically outperformed all the other quintiles. It's actually the opposite. Actually, what happened was in our empirical research was that the high risk quintile dramatically underperformed all the others. So merely tossing the simple step of merely tossing that high quintile aside or ignoring those stocks could have, and what we found has meaningful effects on portfolio performance over time. So that's just one example of how investors might take advantage of our research in real life, in practice.
Great. Well, Rodney, thank you so much for taking the time to share your research and ideas with us. We encourage all of you to read this article and articles from other CFA Institute publications on our website, cfapubs.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at CFApubs. Thank you for listening.